Welcome to the Perspectives on Healthcare podcast, where members of the medical community from different roles, venues, and locations share their unique perspectives on quality healthcare, its future, and how to improve it. Now, from the Your Keynote Speaker studio in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, here is your host, Rob Oliver.
Thank you, and I appreciate you being with me today. My perspective today comes from Christine Koh. She is a dermatologist as well as a dermopathologist. And I love this. In her bio, she says she is sometimes a patient and is also the mother of a patient, which I think is such an important distinction to realize that even medical professionals wear multiple hats. They sit on both sides of the stethoscope, so to speak. She is from Connecticut. She is a member of Generation X. And Christine, thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me. I feel honored.
Absolutely. So tell me a little bit about yourself and your role in healthcare.
So as you said, I'm a physician. I'm a dermatologist and dermatopathologist. And so I work in healthcare, and mainly you can see my microscope actually behind me for anyone who's looking at the video. And so I stand at my microscope and I'll look at slides. So if you've ever had a skin biopsy, that piece of skin gets sent to the lab and processed, and it gets put on a little microscopic slide, and then someone looks at it to make a diagnosis of whether you have a skin cancer like malignant melanoma, or it's benign and it's just a mole, so-called nevus in medical speak. So that's what I mainly do. I also do see patients, mainly what I'm doing now is I'm examining patients who are post-transplant, usually solid organ transplant. And because of the immunosuppressive medicines they're on to prevent rejection of the new organ, they are at increased risk for skin cancer. So I'm examining their skin. I'm not taking care of their newly transplanted kidney or liver or lungs or whatever organ it might be. But that's sort of what I do for my job. And then I have two kids, so I have gone through, you know, sort of prenatal care and postnatal care. And one of my children has had a significant medical issue. And so we had to encounter healthcare a lot from that. And I learned a lot and was humbled a lot by that experience. And so that's sort of where today, not always throughout my career, but today I'm highly influenced by those three aspects: being a doctor, having been a patient myself, but pretty much sort of routine care. And I, you know, everything luckily went well with my pre and postnatal care, and then being the mother of a patient. And actually, I guess I should also mention that we sort of encountered a delay in diagnosis. I'm not sure. I guess you could also maybe classify it as a misdiagnosis until we got the right diagnosis, or a significant delay. And what I mean by significant delay is that my son was diagnosed with a disease called auditory neuropathy when he was just about 2 years old. But I had been taking him to see the doctors and audiologists from 9 months of age. So it would have been better, I think, had he been diagnosed at 9 months of age. But outcome-wise, things have turned out well if you measure it by speech and language acquisition. So, you know, I guess all's well that ends well. But that has really influenced me thinking about diagnosis, misdiagnosis, and how, as a doctor, patient, and mother of patient, I can perhaps influence that sort of outcome of getting the right diagnosis.
Yeah, it's interesting that you combine all three of those together, and you develop that empathy that says, listen, it's not just about eventually ending up at the right diagnosis, but it's it's getting the diagnosis right from the beginning, which then I'm assuming, does that lead into making sure that the treatment is right from the beginning?
Absolutely. That's exactly correct. I think the reason that I am super focused on diagnosis now is because it is tied to the right treatment and management. And so for a lot of things, like especially for dermatopathology, you know, looking at the skin, there are really small differences. You know, do you call it a benign this, you know, so a non-cancer kind of this, or do you call it, you know, a non-cancer, you know, B, you know, A versus B. And it's like potato, potato. It doesn't really matter. It's benign either way. The names we have are sometimes crazy. So meaning, would I call it a seborrheic keratosis or an epidermolytic acanthoma? It's like, they're both benign. Who cares? You know, right. Nothing happens to the patient. The patient doesn't need any more treatment. So, you know, in that case, sometimes I'll joke around with the trainees, like, we could just call it benign, period. You know, that's right. All that needs to happen. And then the dermatologist who did the biopsy communicates that to the patient and it's all fine. What we don't want to do is give a diagnosis where the treatment is different significantly than what should ideally happen for the correct diagnosis. So meaning like, you know, cancer versus not cancer is a good example. Like if it's really a cancer, but I say it's not cancer, then nothing's happening to the patient, like no more treatment. Usually for skin, if we cut a cancer out, it's enough. Not always true for like melanoma or some rare skin cancers like Merkel cell carcinoma, but and even some squamous cell carcinomas, but usually we can cut it out. So usually with a non-cancer diagnosis, you just say to the patient, okay, you're fine, you know, nothing more needs to be done. So in that case, the tumor, the cancer would continue to grow and potentially cause harm. So luckily for me, I guess in skin, say for most cancers, you know, basal cell carcinoma and squamous cell carcinoma, even if we aren't, you know, don't give the diagnosis right away, say it's missed for whatever reason, it just grows locally. And oftentimes then just the bump, the tumor itself is larger and you can still cut it out and the patient is cured later. And just there might be just local harm, you know, psychologically, and then just locally on the skin to the patient, meaning that maybe they have a larger scar, you know, maybe they had a lot of pain for that period of, you know, delayed diagnosis that they didn't need to have, you know, things like that. But for the most part, they're still cured. Melanoma is a little bit of an exception. I think malignant melanoma, like breast cancer, sometimes affects, you know, pretty young people, like, you know, even in their early 20s or even sometimes a little younger, it can metastasize, spread to other parts of the body early on, or you think you're cured and later on it can spread. So in that sense, I think it's a lot like breast cancer and also similar to breast cancer in the sense that sometimes just literally like tenths of a millimeter of involvement of the skin makes a difference. And that, you know, that's just biologic. It's not necessarily like anything that a doctor or the patient can do anything about, you know, but we can try to get the diagnosis right, you know, correct right away.
Sure. What does quality healthcare mean to you?
So I think that's sort of what we've been touching on. I think quality healthcare to me is really treating patients right, you know, and I don't mean only, I guess that's sort of, I'm using it in two different ways, that treating part, treating like medically, but I also think psychosocially, to sort of have a good connection between doctor and patient is increasingly important to me. And I think affects care actually more than I ever really realized as a medical student and sort of, I guess, young or junior physician. But I think when you think about just like, say, like a parent-child relationship, you know, not that the doctor-patient relationship is anything really like that, but in the sense that parents, you know, are the adult and have more knowledge in general, right, than a young child. Not that parents are always right, and parents can get things wrong too. But in that sense, the doctor usually has more knowledge about, like, say, the medical specific things than a patient new, you know, completely new to a diagnosis. Some patients, I will say, a lot of patients are very smart. Once they start looking into and reading, you know, the correct things, they can garner a huge amount of knowledge. So, but I'm just saying initially, you know, when you're, you don't even know you have something, right? And if you have no background in healthcare, the doctor hopefully should know more than the patient and have that kind of sort of overarching perspective that hopefully a parent would have as well. Like, okay, no, this is what you have. This is what we're going to do. And this is how we can get through it. And imagine, like, you know, the better the parent-child relationship is, I think the smoother those things are. And not that you can't get through if, you know, like you're right, everyone's parents are not perfect. And I know I'm not a perfect parent, but it's just, I think, easier the more love there is in a parent-child relationship. Mm-hmm. And so I think similarly for doctor-patient, I'm not sure I would necessarily call it love, but I think that kind of emotion that sort of you're connected to me because I'm your doctor and I'm connected to you because I'm your patient. I think that having that, and I think really between doctor and patient sort of relates to trust, is really important. And is part of getting patients treated correctly.
Okay. And in some ways I'm thinking that there's an old style parenting that would be kind of autocratic in nature, which also may have been what doctors had in the past, which is, this is your diagnosis, and now I'm going to tell you what you're going to, what we're going to do, and I'm not going to explain why, I'm not going to give you any information, I'm just, this is the plan, and I know best, so this is what we're going to do. And I think that you're likening it to parenting styles, or, you know, to the parenting relationship. There's got to be not just the explanation of what the plan is moving forward, but as you share some of the why with that, with the child, with the patient, it's going to expand that as well and increase respect and give them the knowledge that they have, that give them the knowledge so that they can move forward in making decisions when the doctor's not there to give them that. Can you, I think we've kind of covered this, but it's on my list. So can you give me an example of quality healthcare?
Absolutely. So I was very lucky when my son was young to have found a superlative surgeon. And I mean superlative also in two ways. He's technically excellent. And I found that out even sort of actually more later after many years after my son had had surgery by him, but also just literally when we were with him in the exam room, he just gave off such warmth and comfort to us. It was extraordinary. And so examples would be my son at the time was, you know, just a little bit less than age two and so curious about everything. I mean, I think it was partially he couldn't hear well, or maybe not at all. And so he just loved to touch everything, you know, and he actually loved to put stuff in his mouth and, like, I think feel it also with his tongue. And just, you know, a lot of people, when we were going to these new visits, you know, I don't think he really understood, you know, where we were. He'd be very curious. He's a very happy, curious kid. And so, you know, I remember he's just like wandering around this exam room and like touching everything. And I was like chasing after him. And it was so interesting because this surgeon, highly respected in the field, you know, technically excellent, he picks him up and is just holding him. And I just was blown away by that. And then in addition to that, he answered my questions and he said to me, when I was bringing up some of my concerns, he said to me that he said, "You are not alone." And it just, I don't know, the degree of comfort that I derived from that, because I was, and I think it sounds maybe almost, I don't know, like, you know, shouldn't I have known that he's there with me? But I guess I just hadn't had that sense yet from the healthcare we'd received. And it might've not that it was necessarily anyone else's failing. Don't get me wrong. We had also seen some other very good, but that just was an example where I think just having the empathy and he could see my anxiety and worry And he reached out in that sense. So not just from, okay, this is the diagnosis and this is what we're going to do and we're going to do surgery. But he's just like, was kind of like, it's going to be okay. Yeah. And that was just so comforting. Yeah. It was amazing.
No, this is a theme that I'm hearing recur, and that is excellent quality healthcare takes into account not just the physical nature of what's going on, but the psychological and social implications of it as well. What do you wish people understood about your role in healthcare?
So I try to tell my patients now more than ever that it's a partnership. And if they have concerns, if they have questions, they have to let me know. Because I experienced this. I think patients for the most part are kind as well. And they're, my patients are at least, and they always say this, I don't want to bother you. You know, they're like, I know you're so busy. And I'm like, yeah, I am. I'm really busy, but so are you. And you're seeing me for a reason, and that's my job. And if you don't tell me, there's no way I'm going to know. Because I mean, we'll laugh because I'll say this. I'm like, I'm not following you around. I'm like, I don't have a little camera attached where I can see, oh, you have something new growing on you. You know, I just don't know. And so you have to tell me. And so, especially like during COVID and stuff, sometimes it's hard to reach me. Like some of my patients, the phone number wasn't working, like just logistical things that are just horrible. So I think that there are a lot of barriers in healthcare, like, you know, including my own, you know, number that I gave to them not working. And it's like, you know, yeah, like, I'm sorry, you just have to keep trying, you know, and I will too, but, you know, don't not do it because you think you're bothering me. And really, I'll tell them, if you really think that I'm too busy for you, then right, you have to find another doctor who doesn't give you that feeling, because otherwise you're not getting the right care that you need.
That's a super powerful statement to make. What excites you about the future of healthcare?
So I think what excites me is a couple of things. One is this concept of patient-centered care, or another term for it is relationship-centered care, where patients are, especially with the internet. And now I think it's hit the streets maybe, or about to Google Doc or something like that, where patients can, it might only be for derm, maybe it's called Google Skin, but you can like put in a couple symptoms and sort of the computer will generate a diagnosis for you. So in some ways I'm a little worried about it, but in some ways I think, and the Cures Act, you know, which is meaning that patients can get their results right away. And also as a physician, I am concerned about that as well. I think it's a powerful thing, but also, can be very detrimental. Mm. And what I mean by that is, so all of this patient-centered care, relationship-centered care, the Cures Act, where you should have access to your results pretty much, you know, as soon as they're available, and the internet, you know, and sort of being able to search things yourself. I think all of that is great because it puts power in the patient's hands, and you know, you're the one, as the parent of a patient, you're the one who is most affected, right, by that on a daily basis, and the doctors don't necessarily know, like including me, what it's like to live in your shoes with that disease or the symptoms or whatever, you know, and sometimes the diagnosis is wrong. And if you could tell me the symptoms, you know, in a way that I hear it for sure, you know, maybe I would know, oh yeah, you don't have the right diagnosis, you know? But the problems that I see with that, the not so much patient-centered and relationship-centered care, because that's still the doctors there with you, right? And so together as a partnership, you can interpret things and come to conclusions. But the Cures Act, where you get the results ASAP, and the internet, I used to always cringe when patients would tell me, oh, I looked it up on, you know, I did an internet search, and then I've done it now for my son, you know, many times. And And the Cures Act has already hit us here. And patients sometimes they don't know what to do with their results, you know. So then the doctor's office is bombarded with calls like, "What does this mean? What does this mean?" You know, and patients are very anxious, and you know, rightly so, because they don't know what it means. And so I was affected, for example, in sort of a positive and negative way by this. For example, so my son had some genetic testing long ago, and for whatever reason, the result was mailed to me. You know, I got it without any interpretation by the doctor. This is years ago before the Cures Act, but so it's as if the Cures Act is in effect, and I just get the result, you know.
Right.
I had no idea what to do with it. I looked it up on the internet, but there wasn't really any information about it. So I put a call in to the geneticist, and I just said, what does this mean? You know, but I had to wait, you know, a couple days, and so it made me nervous. And so,
sure.
I don't know that anything could be done about that, but I think it's hard when you're, you know, you just want to know, and the doctor's not going to be able to call you back right away. So I'm sort of agnostic on that right now. I don't know if it's better to have that in your hands and just be puzzled about it and anxious about it for a couple of days, or if it's better for the doctor to hang on to it and then tell you. So I don't know, but I think that's going to arise when you don't know how to interpret it. It's, you know, you're going to be anxious sometimes, and no one's going to be there to hold your hand right away.
Sure.
And some patients have told me that when they have a significant diagnosis, usually of some kind of cancer, they don't want me to tell, some of them don't want me to tell them over the phone. You know, they're like, no, I want to come see you. I want to be in the office. And so I think it just feels like, you know, they feel better that they're not as alone. So it's hard. And because I think different patients are going to feel different about it. Different parents are going to feel different about it. And different doctors are going to feel different about that. But the other, on the flip side, the power of the internet, my son, that diagnosis of auditory neuropathy. So he was diagnosed late, but at 13 months of age, I still remember this, because not to beat myself or anyone else up about it, but it's just a perfect example. I said at that time, I asked, as the doctor's leaving the room, I said, yeah, but you know, it just seems like he can hear sometimes and not others. Like, which, you know, to me at the time, I was like, well, if you can hear sometimes, it means you can hear. But actually, auditory neuropathy is exactly that. You can hear sometimes and you can't hear others. It's like a radio station, you know, coming in and out of static. And at the time, I remember she's walking out the door and she said to me, well, there's auditory neuropathy, but that's so rare. Like, you know, and you would need a completely different test to have that, you know, to make that diagnosis, which she hasn't had yet. But, you know, do you want him to go under general anesthesia? And so I just said, no, I don't want him to go under general anesthesia. So, but that was the wrong question to ask me. It was more like, do you want to get the right diagnosis for your son? Then I would say, yes, you know?
Yeah.
So it was just sort of a confusing thing. And there was some bias and authority bias. Like I was like, oh, well, she's saying it's so rare. Doesn't matter. But had I looked it up, you know, when I went home, because I didn't, I trusted it. And I think I was like, I don't want him to get general anesthesia because I knew the risks, you know? And then right. I think my healthcare experience was a detriment where I was like, oh, general anesthesia is not good for a little kid if he doesn't need it.
Sure.
So I was like, no, I don't want him to get general anesthesia. So, you know, then I don't want him to get that test. But it was like, but had she phrased it differently, like, do you want the right diagnosis? Given what you just said, hearing that is fluctuating, auditory neuropathy is possible. Do you want to see if that's the correct diagnosis? I would have said yes.
Right.
And then I would have gone home and looked it up, and I would have known this is what my son has. Because when I read about it, you know, and a good site, I was like, yeah, everything they described, I was like, yes, this is him.
Sure.
So I think sometimes when your disease matches the textbook well, you know, we call it like reading the textbook, which not everyone's does. When you get to a good site and you read about it, you'll know, like, this is what I have, you know? And so I think in that sense, there's power in knowledge in the internet, you know? That I think that's exciting. That is, but it's sort of like I just described. It's a double-edged sword.
That's exactly the phrase I was going to use. It's a double-edged sword that it puts some power in your hands, but it sometimes leaves you alone to deal with the fallout from what you're getting. So What is one thing that medical professionals can start doing today to improve the quality of healthcare?
So this has worked for me, and I'm happy to say my husband's a physician as well, and he tried it out, and he says it transformed his practice as well. So I think it sounds really simple, but I think eye contact. Mm. And everyone says that, right? Just make eye contact. And I think I don't know, maybe I used to try to do it as well. But what worked for me is actually, in order to try to make eye contact, my trick is figure out what color someone's eyes are.
Wow.
So when I walk into the room now, as a reminder to myself to try to connect, I'm always like, you know, the first thing I do, and it's sort of habit now, I don't have to think about it. I'm like, you know, I used to have to think, what's their eye color? Like, look, you know, and I would literally be like forcing myself to look, because when you walk into the room, and especially if it's a new patient, there's a lot of stuff going on. If I'm running late, and then we have Epic now, we have our medical record system, and you have to type away, you have to log in right away, you know, like there's all this stuff. So it's like more and more sort of the patient just sort of gets ignored, not necessarily intentionally, you know, it's just sort of because then I'm like typing away and, oh, like I can't log in today. I don't know. And so I think to sort of walk in first and be like, okay, like, remember, you know, and like I said, now it's habit. Like, what is their eye color? And then it's interesting. My husband put it this way. He was sort of like, it's transformative because he looks and he notes, and it just really, it takes like, some people's eye color is hard. You know, it's like, is it hazel? Is it whatever? But, you know, 5 seconds at most, right? And he's like, and then, you know, you'll tend to smile because you're like looking at someone's eyes and you're looking at their face. It even works with COVID, you know, with the mask. So it's great. And he says, and then, you know, without really thinking about it, you smile and the patient smiles. And it's just so much better than like walking in, computer, log in, and, you know, typing away. And what's the problem today? You know, it's just totally different.
Yeah. But it goes back to what you were talking about earlier with making that patient practitioner connection, and you know, wonderful. Christine Coe, you have been so open and so willing to share. Thank you so much for being here, and I really appreciate your perspective on healthcare.
Thanks for listening to Perspectives on Healthcare. Visit perspectivesonhealthcare.com to learn more about Rob Oliver or to subscribe so you never miss an episode. If this podcast was valuable, we'd appreciate a review on iTunes. Or if you tell a friend or coworker about the show, that would be helpful too. Join us again next time for more Perspectives on Healthcare.